And as an axe breeder and still being responsible for breeding, well, I have to tell you that all our vegetable crops, they have their own specific challenges and make every crop very interesting.
So there are so many different types of tomatoes, of watermelons, of melons, cucumbers. So it is very, very diverse.
In the vegetable business, everybody is a sommelier, I can tell you. We all have, let's say, ideas on what taste should be. And of course, I think it's an open door. Taste is very personal.
There will be things that need to be shifted into, genetical control from chemicals as of today, and we need to be ready for that.
Melons actually belong to the pumpkin family. Popeye, spinach, and the unanswered question of iron content. Tomato juice tastes particularly good when drinking on a plane. The world of vegetables is not only quite fascinating, vegetables are also very healthy, and we should eat a lot of them. The World Health Organization recommends eating at least 400 grams of fruit and vegetables a day. They are not only beneficial for healthy nutrition, but also in the sense of an environmentally sustainable diet, to name planetary health diet as a keyword here. Accordingly, vegetables and also seeds for vegetables play an important economic role all over the world. The market volume currently stands at around 7 million euros and is the third largest segment after soy and corn. And experts are expecting further growth of around 3 to 5% per year. Reason enough for KWS to further diversify its portfolio and to become part of this market. 5 years ago, the company announced its entry into the vegetable market. On the one hand, with the acquisition of the Dutch company Popvriend, leading in spinach seed, and on the other, with the long-term organic development of a new business unit with various vegetable crops. The aim is to achieve a significant market position in the long run. What has already worked with other crops is now being done in the same way. We will talk in detail today about whether it works that easily and what it takes to be successful in the veggie business. Having said that, I now welcome our today's guest, who I would like to introduce in more detail. Simon Walter is an industrial engineer with a specialization in aerospace. After working for various international companies, such as Lufthansa, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and Daimler, which is Mercedes-Benz today, he joined KWS as head of business development Korn in 2019. After various management roles in Korn and finally leading the business unit, he moved into his current role as head of the newly founded vegetable business unit at KWS since mid of 2023. Kurt Engels started at KWS in 2019 as well and is responsible for vegetable breeding as global head. He's taking care for the breeding strategy and breeding departments and farm organizations in the Netherlands, Spain, Italy, Turkey, Mexico, and Brazil. Before that, he held various management roles at international vegetable seed companies. Kurt Engels holds a master's degree in plant science, plant breeding, and agriculture from the Wageningen University in the Netherlands. Welcome, the two of you. My name is Ina Bahnkote-Seekamp, and I'm your host today. And before we get started with our actual conversation, let's start with our very traditional intro question. What is your favorite crop and why? Note, you do not have to name a veggie crop here, but of course you can do.
Okay. Simon, you first.
Yeah, first of all, hi, Sina. Thanks for having us. Great to be here. And yeah, happy to have a discussion on that. The favorite crop in the KWS portfolio, I actually have to disappoint our vegetable colleagues. It is sunflower for me personally, because I think there's nothing more beautiful than, for example, when I've been in Ukraine, seeing a full field, a huge field, large acreage of sunflowers fully in flowering, for me, the most beautiful crop we have in the portfolio.
Yeah, also thank you for the invitation, Sina. Yeah, it's very difficult to mention a favorite crop, honestly. And it also depends on from which angle you look at it, as a consumer or as an ex-breeder and still being responsible for breeding. But as a consumer, it depends very much on where I am, the time of the day, with whom I am, and so on and so forth. So if I would like something sweet or a dessert, I would say melon. If I'm preparing a pasta, I would use tomato and spinach, not melon, of course. It depends very much. A salad, it's a mix of vegetables. You know that a big pepper you can stuff with meat or with other vegetables and put in the oven. Then I would choose pepper if I would like to stuff. If you would eat a soup, everybody automatically is thinking about tomato soup. But do you know that cucumber soup is really great if you know how to prepare it with fresh cucumbers? If you're thirsty and you're in the fields with the sun on your head, very warm, why not eat a watermelon, the juicy watermelon? So it depends very much on where I am and with whom I am and so on and so forth. And as an ex-breeder and still being responsible for breeding, well, I have to tell you that all our vegetable crops, they have their own specific challenges and make every crop very interesting. So actually a preference, I really don't have. I'm sorry.
I think that was the best intro we could have wished for. So thanks a lot. And Simon, I think all of the KWS colleagues would be okay with your choice because everyone loves sunflower, obviously. Okay, so first question to you, Simon. We've already heard it in the introduction. The market for vegetables and vegetable seeds is an attractive one. And also from a personal perspective, you switched position from the KWS corn business unit to head of vegetables just a couple of months ago. What is so exciting about the vegetable segment?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, before I joined vegetable, everybody was always saying vegetable is different. The vegetable is different from field crops, but I didn't really know what that means until I actually was able to experience that and learn from my colleagues and understand the vegetable seed industry a bit better. So what makes it very much interesting and somehow also different from at least comparing it to my former job in corn is the complexity, the diversity, the segmentation of vegetables. So there are so many different types of tomatoes, of watermelons, of melons, cucumbers, all the crops which Kurt already mentioned in his introduction. So it is very, very diverse and therefore makes it super interesting because it's also volatile, it's moving, it's developing, and it has different angles of how you look at it because the product which we are, or especially Kurt's teams are breeding for, they have different demands. We need to look always into the entire value chain and everybody that takes part in that because there are different demands for the different parties. Could be that, of course, we as a consumer, we want to have a nice look, it should have a nice taste, but it should also stay fresh 4 weeks in our refrigerator. That's sometimes the demands we have consumer. But for somebody else, the grower, of course, they want to have high yields, they want to make profits with it. And then you have the intermediaries, which are the shippers, etc. They, of course, are very much interested that it's a shippable product, that it has a certain shelf life, etc. And that makes it just fantastically interesting, diverse, complex, challenging, of course, as well. And for me, that's just some parts of the beauty of vegetables.
Sounds like a good combination. We will come back to some of the aspects you already mentioned later. Now a question to you, Kurt. You are currently sitting in the office in Andijk, a Dutch city, which is also one of the largest central location of the business unit and which is located directly in the heart of the so-called vegetable seed valley. In the Netherlands, the first intensively farmed areas were created as early as the 17th century to supply the growing urban population with vegetables. What is the special relevance of the Netherlands for the worldwide vegetable market?
The Netherlands always has and still is indeed very relative for the total vegetable market, I would say. I mean, in the past, due to the very little surface actually available in this small country to produce food in general, among which vegetables, but also due to the closeness to the sea, so you have a lot of light, it's a very interesting area to produce plants and vegetables, but also, you know, the wind and other elements that play a role for which we needed protection during the growth of our vegetables, the high density of the population. The Netherlands the Dutch always needed to be very innovative in order to get enough food produced for its population, also in vegetables. And that is shown by the high level of technology development that is going on in this country in the whole agricultural sector, leading to a very efficient vegetable production. And I think we are the countries where we have the highest yields per square meter simply because we use the most up-to-date technologies for that. It's also shown the relevance by the relatively large number of breeding companies which are Dutch or at least have Dutch roots, specifically in what you mentioned already, the Seed Valley here where vegetables is also located in Ondijk. And apart from that, one of the highest rated agriculture universities of the world is located in Wageningen. So Wageningen University and Research is a very big name in the whole agricultural world where a lot of technologies are developed, everything that has to do with the food industry as well as with the agricultural industry. So lots of new developments come also from that university. So yeah, all that knowledge and technology, apart also from the products itself that are produced in this country, they are also exported to, let's say, all over the world. Yeah, talking about relevance, yes, very high relevance indeed. And being Dutch, of course, I'm a bit proud of that.
Yeah, and Wageningen is also the second important central location for the KWS Vegetable Business Unit.
Correct.
Simon, a question to you again. KWS announced its entry into the vegetable seed market 5 years ago. We all know that plant breeding is a long-term business that needs patience. It takes up to 10 years on average to develop a new variety, a bit less in the veggie segment. How do you start from scratch in such a business?
Very good question, which I guess I can only answer partially because since I just joined more or less a year ago, I think a lot of work has been already done in the years before to setting the first or doing the first steps, launching a business unit and developing it. But of course, we are by far not ready. And what I think is what has been done and in a very successful way to do that is to really start from scratch, meaning to hire the first people. I think that is one of the most important pieces of starting such a business unit, to find people which have the right entrepreneurship, have the right knowledge to kick something off, because you are, of course, constantly growing and hiring more people, growing in knowledge, growing in maturity. And I think that's one of the key things at the beginning. And besides that, it sounds simple, but of course, it's very difficult. We have part of our strategy is really an organic development of a business unit. So it's literally finding a plot in the areas where we want to have a station or find a station, build a station, build a greenhouse, acquire germplasm from gene banks from the market, and starting breeding, actually. So this is part of the great work of the colleagues in the last years, and kind of combined with the challenge to, okay, when is the time to also be ready then for the next step. So we have breeding and research, which is reaching a maturity, but now it comes also, we need to go the next step. We need to develop products. We need to start learning how to produce our first products, etc. So yeah, there are many areas to develop, and it's also a lot of basic work. I think what is very much different compared to, let's say, the areas I was working in KWS is, well, nothing is in place, right? There is no process. There are no interfaces between functions. So you have to develop that. So it's quite a stretch from very strategic day-to-day work where we need to give ourselves guidance. And there are other days where you need to go back to the drawing board and draw a process and define an interface with colleagues. And yeah, that's part of the fun work in really developing a business unit from scratch.
How do you make sure to keep the focus?
That's always a tough one. I think it's a constant challenge for us to keep the focus, because I always take the example of, it doesn't matter whether you sell 1 or 100 units to a customer, if you produce 1 or 1,000 units of a tomato variety. The work related from supply chain perspective, from production perspective, for example, is very similar. So and not having a mature organization means we are constantly understaffed, right? We constantly have more things that we could work on than we have people, than we have resources. So it's very strong prioritization, and it's very much a strong prioritization together, because we all need to work on the same priority. So on a regular basis to hold your breath and see what is now important actually as a next step instead of trying to solve everything at the same time is very important, and to communicate across our colleagues, across the management team, that we also have joint priorities, because it doesn't make sense if we don't run in the same direction jointly.
And talking crops and products, again, a question to you, Simon. Looking at the KWS Vegetables portfolio, which crops are of strategic relevance and where are we with these crops?
Yeah, so we have actually 9 strategic crops in the portfolio. Just to maybe name them, because I guess not everybody in the KWS world could name them if we wake them up in the middle of the night. So we have basically what is the portfolio, which was originally coming from Popfrint. We have spinach, beans as our today's value drivers, but also we have red beet and chard, which was already started under Popfrint times. And then we have basically the new crops, which we have started as KWS, which we call the fruity crops, tomato, watermelon, melon, cucumber, and pepper. And they are all in totally different maturities. So if we go through our 9 strategic crops, we have, of course, spinach beans, as mentioned. They are the most mature crops. We are a market leader in spinach globally, and we are a top player in beans. So there we are quite far progressed. And the ambition and the challenge is, of course, to strengthen and further develop our very strong position we have there. So we are very mature, so to say. When it comes to red beet and chard, yes, we do have turnover, but we are also still, it's still a long way to go, is to develop our portfolio, to develop products, to develop certain resistances. So also there, we still have a journey ahead to fully mature. And then in contrast to everything that mentioned, the fruity crops, most of them have been started since 2019. But as mentioned, in 2019, there was one person, and then we further developed. There were no breeding stations, there were no breeders, etc. So in the last years, all the breeding programs have been starting and developing. And where are we in terms of maturity? Quite far, actually. So we do have actually hybrids in all of our crops. So we do have hybrids, which we are now transferring from a classical breeding responsibility into the product development responsibility, which is fantastic and which is super fast. And there are even some lighthouse examples like a watermelon, which already goes into commercial sales, which comes out of our proprietary breeding efforts. Just to give a big kudos to our breeder there in Brazil, we have a variety called Tropicalia, which is actually going commercial and which is actually even sold out already. So we even have a lack of seeds. So it's a wonderful example how quick things go and how far we have come already since 2019.
In this context, it's maybe worth mentioning that, for example, red beet is related to sugar beet, the crop that KWS has the longest history with. Do we make use of this from a breeding perspective?
Yeah, very good question, Sina. And the answer is simple. Yes, absolutely. Of course we do. Red beet and sugar beet are from the same family, and even they can be crossed between each other. And with the track record of KWS in sugar beet, with up-to-date technologies developed, lots of knowledge about the crop, but also about the genetics, several disease resistances already developed, of course our red beet program gets an extra impulse. And for sure, we will be using all that knowledge that KWS already has and think to be able to accelerate the development of red beet varieties. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Kurt, again, question to you. You are heading the Global Vegetable Breeding Department. In this podcast, we've already talked a lot about feed crops like rye, sugar beet, or corn. How does the cultivation of vegetables differ from these crops, for example, regarding breeding goals, growing conditions, customer structure?
Yeah, quite a bit, honestly. I mean, the breeding, the way of breeding, the technologies that are used in vegetables are also used in field crops and vice versa and so on and so forth. But I think the biggest differences between field crops at one side, like corn, like sugar beet, like rye, and vegetables at the other side, is one of the things is scale. I mean, if you talk about millions and millions of plants in the rye crops, in the field crops, you talk about thousands or hundreds of plants in the vegetables. That means also that the scale of the breeding programs is completely different. In vegetable, we are dealing with way less plants. That also gives a different way of breeding in a way. I think another big difference is the enormous segmentation that we are dealing with in vegetable. We all know if we go to the supermarket what kind of tomatoes, that's always an interesting example to mention, you can buy. Actually, you can make tomatoes as big as a berry and as big as a small football and everything in between with different shapes and so on and so forth. And then you have the different climates. The ways of growing are very different. You have greenhouses, you have glasshouses, you have plastic tunnels, you have open fields. You can continue with mentioning such a long list. So the segmentation in vegetables really is huge, which also is quite a difference with the field crops. What also is very important in vegetables, and not unimportant in field crops, but I think there is a difference here, is the enormous list of quality traits that play an important role in the vegetable business. So how the shape is, how the color is, the size of the fruits and so on, for the development of the plant, how easy it is to harvest, all the disease resistance, which in some crops is a list of 10 plus of disease resistances you have to put in your material. So that is also a bit of a difference. While I think in field crops, of course, you also have quality traits, but yield, I think, is by far number one there. And of course, also the way the products are consumed. I mean, in the vegetable business, more than 90% or 95% or even higher, the products that are produced, the tomatoes, the peppers, the melons, they are directly eaten by the consumer. While in the field crops, maize is going first to the animals and then it comes to through meat and so on and so forth to the consumer. Sugar beet, the beets are not eaten by the consumer. No, the sugar is taken out and that is used for the consumer. That's also quite a difference with vegetables. So yes, there are quite some differences between the two of them.
Yeah, and this leads us to the next question. You already talked a bit about important characteristics or traits. Which traits are the most relevant from a customer's perspective and how do we establish those?
Right. Yeah, very, very clear question. I think Simon already mentioned a little bit at the beginning of this podcast. First of all, it depends on who you call the customer, because the customer can be the grower, can be the supermarket, can be directly the consumer, can also be the processing industry. And all these different customers have their own demands on how a variety should look like. So a grower wants stability of yield, wants stability in growing, wants easy growing, good germination of the seeds, as little as possible diseases, so low input, easy to harvest, and so on and so forth. If you go to the supermarket, the product has to look nice when it's in their shops. It also has to follow certain demands they have in size and so on and so forth, because they have their own boxes, they have their own shelves, so everything should perfectly fit in that. Shelf life is also very important. So the product, when it arrives in the supermarket, might not be sold the same day, maybe the next or even 2 days later. So then it should still be and look fresh for that matter. If you ask the consumer, of course, it has to look nice as well, but it also has to taste well, to smell well. Convenience is important. So, you know, nowadays everybody has a very big, busy agenda, and the time that is left over for cooking is getting less and less every time. So they don't want products that they have to work on a lot of time before they can use it in their meals. So also convenience is quite important. And so on and so forth. So there are many, many different traits depending on who you consider the customer that we as breeding have to work on.
If I may add one piece is and what Kurt described, not always, but there are also very good examples, not going into technical details. Sometimes those things are very much also in conflict, right? Shelf life and taste is very often something which doesn't go very well hand in hand. It does work, of course. But it sometimes even on a gene level conflicts with each other. But we need to always have the full chain in scope in order to have a product which can be a long lasting star product. You need to basically take care of the entire chain and make sure that you fulfill the needs of everybody there. And they are, as said, sometimes even conflicting, so to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a very clear example, and I suppose we also have a lot of German listeners here, the famous Wasserbombe, if you talk about the tomato coming from the Dutch greenhouses. Well, consumer, listen carefully to what I say. If you want to buy only once every 2 weeks all your vegetables and to store them for 2 weeks in the fridge, and after 2 weeks you still expect them to be fresh, we need to work on shelf life. Also, sometimes the fruits are simply harvested a little bit earlier, because if they're completely ripe, then you cannot keep them as long. So all these, let's say, contradictional demands indeed play a role, and then up to the breeders to find the perfect balance between them.
You've mentioned taste as an important factor. How exactly is this evaluated? Are there like vegetable sommeliers at KWS who try out new products?
In the vegetable business, everybody is a sommelier, I can tell you. We all have, let's say, ideas on what taste should be. And of course, I think it's an open door. Taste is very personal. So it's also not an easy trait to work for, apart from the fact that so many things influence taste. It's not only the genetics, but it's also the way it's grown, how many sunlight fruits get, and so on and so forth. So it's really a difficult thing. But of course, we pay attention to taste. Several things can be simply measured, like the sugar content, acidity, bitterness, all that kind of stuff can be measured. But for example, sugar content in the Netherlands is something different than what our consumers, for example, in Italy want. So we also have to look very carefully to for which markets you are developing, for example, a cherry tomato, to continue with the tomato example, because the cherries that are liked in Italy are not the same cherries that we eat in the Netherlands, for example. So it's very personal, and that makes it also very challenging to produce products, to develop varieties that are good tasting.
On the other side, just to add, Sina, your question actually is quite interesting, because if you look into very mature vegetable players, they do have a lot of taste panels, etc. And especially if you go more into specialty markets, so not, let's say, commodity markets within the vegetable, but in really special segments, like very special, small, even colorful cherry tomato with a special taste. That's actually in a full mature grown vegetable world, and also we as a company, there will be something like taste panels. There will be a close collaboration with supermarkets to also introduce something unique. So not just the product where everybody has, let's say, a product in the market, but really going to those specialties. And then you also conduct such taste panels to convince and to have something unique on the marketplace.
Yeah, totally true. And during the selection, of course, during the development of the parental lines of the hybrid varieties that we are producing, also the breeders, their assistants, and so on and so forth, they are tasting simply the fruits. Of course, it's then their personal taste preference, perhaps, but they are also knowing a little bit what the taste preferences are in the markets where they are working for. I used to be a tomato breeder in the far past, and when I was selecting my cherry tomatoes, for a week long, I didn't need to eat anything, because my tummy was full with tomatoes, sometimes even sick of it, simply because you do need to taste themselves, at least to get rid of the worst ones during your selection procedure. So yeah, it's difficult, but we pay a lot of attention to it, sure.
Yeah, it's actually the best part. It's actually the best part of, also for me personally, switching from corn to vegetables. It's much more fun meeting the breeders and talking about their work, because you can taste it. And in corn, we haven't done that so much.
And you have to be careful. Specifically, this may be a nice example about melons. Of course, it's clear that the taste in melons is highly important. And if you are testing really a large number of melon varieties or melon plants in the field, be careful, because when the sun is shining on those melons waiting for you to taste them, bit by bit, some alcohol is produced in those fruits under the sunlight. So at the end of the day, you might end up a little bit tipsy. So be careful there.
Anyway, we should people let know when they can apply for this taste panels, I guess.
Exactly.
We will.
Another crucial factor today is sustainability and resource efficiency. What is important when it comes to sustainability with regards to vegetable seed?
Yeah, sustainability, of course, is a very important item with a growing population in the world, with areas where water supply comes a little bit under pressure, climate change and so on and so forth. It's a very important topic. And of course, also in the vegetable breeding, we take that into account. I think you can bring it down roughly into two things. So first of all, the development of varieties that need little input with a maximum output. That is what we are trying to do. So to develop varieties that need less water or less nutrients, also less manual or machine input, because also that is influence, of course, the environment. That is one of the things we try to do. And the other thing, of course, is develop varieties with the highest level of resistances so that the growers don't need to use too much chemical treatments. So, yeah, absolutely. It has a big influence on the way we are doing our breeding. Yes.
Let's look in another topic. So, Simon, we've already learned that the customer structure in the veggie segment is very different. I think that became quite clear. But maybe you can summarize a bit how a seed company, we as a seed company, are embedded in that whole value chain.
That's a good one. Just to try to explain, what is very different is also the way or the definition of customer. Of course, to the field crops, it's per se a different customer if we look very classic towards a farmer versus a grower. So there's very little overlap between corn farmers, which happen to also grow vegetables. Of course, there are always exceptions. There are always areas in the world where farmers grow field crops as well as also vegetable crops. However, usually the customer is different, but also within vegetables, basically that definition is not so clean, because it really depends on the market and whom are we talking about and with whom do we also need to discuss varieties and where is also the decision making taking place. Let me make an example. So you have, for example, sometimes it's just very classical, the grower. So it's the customer is the grower, which will finally grow our product and sell it to the marketplace. But it can be also that they are super integrated growers. For example, in our spinach business, we do collaborate with fully integrated growers. So you need to imagine that they are not only buying seeds, they are growing them on their own farms, they are harvesting that, they are washing that, they are packing that, and they are even doing the marketing and are the brand in the supermarket, then in the food markets, in the Costco's, in the whole food market in the US. So they are fully end-to-end integrated into the value chain. And then, of course, this is a very important customer. And then there are all other examples, right? So there are also all other kind of examples where you have sometimes another example in spinach would be sometimes you see what Kurt explained earlier is we as a consumer, we want to have kind of the same experience year round. But that doesn't work, of course, under normal weather conditions and this having a summer and a winter. So crops need to travel. So we do have customers, for example, in Europe, which have then locations in UK, in Spain, in Italy, in order to produce year-round spinach. And of course, they have the desire to always have the same experience, always have the same product, always the same color, the same leaf size, et cetera, et cetera. So what we need to do there is to identify who's the decision maker, who's the party that drives the market in the chain, and it can be very different. But then we also sometimes need to actually act on global key account level in order to anticipate that. And in other markets, it's let's say very classic, even a dealer business or directly selling to growers and advising to growers. So we have actually everything, and that makes it interesting, but also complex in a way.
Yeah, I can imagine very well that there's really a bunch of requirements that you need to keep in mind and to balance. Let's put it this way. Let's maybe look at one of our crops even more in detail, Kurt. The market for tomatoes is one of the most important ones in the vegetable sector. Tomatoes are considered the vegetable with the highest yield in terms of quantity. There are more than 3,000 varieties, and the world's largest exporter is Mexico. Can you give us an insight into what is particularly important when developing tomato seed and growing them?
Yeah, and what goes for tomato in general also goes for other crops, but with such a highly segmented market as tomato is, of course, before you start developing anything, you really need to have a very good picture of the total market and what are the demands in the different market. So which regions they are growing, what types, what kind of soils, is it in the greenhouses, in glasshouses, in tunnels, what are the conditions? So very important, the soil types, and also that stuff. You have lots of cultural differences in different areas. They prefer different types. We were talking about taste already before, so you have different preferences for taste. In different areas in the world, you're dealing with different disease pressures. You have viruses, you have fungi, you have bacteria. So you really need to have a very good picture on what are the differences worldwide, what are the biggest markets, what types they want, and so on and so forth. So before you can start doing any breeding, you really need to do some investigation and research after what actually the different markets want from us. So that is, for tomato, the clearest example, I think, very, very important because, as you say, it's highly, highly segmented. True, 3,000 varieties, and I think it's an underestimation, honestly. I'm sure there will be even many more. So, yeah, for a breeder, absolutely important to know what to develop. That is actually the most important thing, I think.
Yeah, at the same time, there are... sometimes critics saying that a few high performance varieties are at the expense of the variety of choice available in the supermarket. And what can you tell about diversity in vegetable breeding?
Yeah, I disagree with the statement that the higher yielding varieties that they, let's say, suppress the lesser one, because there is a market for everything. And of course, it also is expressed in a way in the prices that consumers have to pay for the different types. Well, I can just tell you a story. When I was a child, when I was young, there was only one type of tomato we could find in the shop, because big supermarkets didn't even exist at the time. That was the big single tomato, beef-like, and that was the one that we were using in the house for everything, for soup, for salads, for, well, whatever, for eating just like that, to make juice as well. Nowadays, and I think everybody listening knows that, if you go to the supermarkets, you see a whole range of different products, not only tomato, but also pepper, even cucumbers, smaller ones, snack cucumbers. You have the short cucumbers, you have the long cucumbers, and that goes on with other crops as well. You have watermelons with seeds, without seeds, bigger ones, elongated, round ones. I'm not saying that in every supermarket you will find all those types, but let's say the choice and the diverse types and sizes and colors, I didn't mention colors, but also colors that you can find nowadays in the supermarket is really huge. So it's absolutely not true that only the biggest, best yielding varieties are sold in the shops. You find really a big diversification. And talking about diversification and also diversity, actually, it's not only about the products. Of course, I'm head of breeding, so that also in our breeding programs, it's very, very important to keep a very broad and diverse base of germplasm, of different types of, in the example of tomato, of different tomatoes, even with sometimes with traits and characteristics that you don't need at this moment. But you know, in future, market can change, the demands can change, new diseases can pop up. So also in a breeding program, it's really important to keep a very diverse germplasm base in order to be able to react quickly on future market changes. So yeah, and to answer your question, is diversity important? Yes, it's extremely important from a breeding point of view, and also a consumer is not satisfied anymore with just one type of tomato. They want choice.
Yeah, Maybe just to add something, I think we also need to be sometimes careful with who is influencing what. I think in the end, it all starts with what Kurt said. It's a consumer decides and in the end basically has a huge influence on the demand. I think we have the same discussions also sometimes with cheap meat, etc. If people are not willing to basically take money in their hands to afford proper products in a supermarket, and by that influencing the demands, it also gives limitations all the way upstream to us as breeders. So the breeders, I think we make a lot of offers in offering diversity. We would love to work even more on just our organic varieties and things like that. But in the end, we also have to run a business, right? So if there's no demand and if there's no market, because the consumer or the supermarkets basically earn more money at the supermarket with a different product per square meter, it's not impossible, but there's a limitation of our influence. And therefore, I think the starting points to push even for more diversity and things like that is not only upstream from the breeding angle, but it should be also very much downstream from the consumer side, which have in the end an even bigger influence. And we can then for sure, as Kurt said, we have the diversity and we are happy to deliver upon that in the end products if there's a market for it.
Many thanks to both of you for these exciting insights. I feel like this was not the only and last time that we talked about the topic of vegetable seeds. So I again
That's
say
good.
Thank
That's
you
good.
And talk soon.
Okay, thank you very
thank you
much,
Sina.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Was a pleasure. Thank you very
was
much.
Was a pleasure, true.
And that was World of Farming, the KWS podcast with the topic of similar in nature, but not in detail, entering the vegetable business. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever podcasts are available. We look forward to your questions and comments.